Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Butcher Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. That's right, you. You're probably thinking, how is it brought to you by me? I don't understand. Explain this to me, Ryan. I will. For the price of a cup of coffee, a beer, or just tipping the boys, that's right, you can subscribe to patreon.com/BlueShirtsBreakaway. Even though it's the offseason, there's no Rangers hockey, we still do this podcast, and we have every single Monday night when we record it for the last 7 years. It's driving me insane. And honestly, it makes me sad and sick to my stomach that I have to talk to Greg this often. That being said, please support us so I can continue to do this and continue to do this podcast about the New York Rangers, a team that makes me sad. Today we'll be talking draft picks. Nice opening, Ryan. We'll be talking draft picks with our friend Drew Way, who's our resident prospect expert. We'll be talking about how we don't have a first rounder, who were the hot gems that the Rangers could reach for, what's going on in the prospect system in general, and a bunch of other nonsense. And Greg and I will talk about Artemi Panarin and some other stuff, but without further ado, here is Mark Messier.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Hey, Blue Shirts Breakaway fans. Welcome to the week of the Blue Shirts Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead. I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan. And Greg, I saw a no-hitter over the weekend.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if you know this. The Stanley Cup's over.
It is. Yeah. Congratulations to the Avalanche, Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't know if you know this. Dirty team. Really dirty.
Dirty team. Fraudulent, by the way. I listened to 32 Thoughts today, and Elliot Friedman was like, that team plays like a team that hasn't won before. And I was just sitting in my car being like, because they haven't won a legitimate one, buddy. That's why they're playing like they haven't won one before.
Can I just say, the Stamkos boarding non-call, then throwing a puck into a ref, then checking a ref, it tells me a lot about why the calls didn't go the Rangers' ways in that series. Just saying.
The one that was most offensive to me, I think, was Kucherov having a temper tantrum with the equipment staff. With 30 seconds left, they didn't have a stick for him, so he took his glove off and threw it at the equipment manager?
Yeah, guys, you won two cups. Hold on.
Well, they won two nonsense bullshit cups.
I know you want to win more. I get winning three in a row is a great accomplishment. You win two. I'd kill for one.
I also, game six of the Stanley Cup final was on Sunday. The Avalanche clinched. Everybody knows that as they listen to this. Can I run through with you what my sports Sunday was like?
Yeah. Run it.
I, of course, watched the Mets game. Typical.
Shocker.
Noon start. I'm actually a fan of the noon Peacock game. I know that makes me in the minority, but I liked it.
Cool. I enjoyed it. Sports start early. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Mets game was done at 3, which gave me plenty of time. You would think, Ryan, plenty of time to regroup and recover before the Stanley Cup. I watched the end of the College World Series. Congratulations, Ole Miss. I watched the end of the Travelers Championship. That's right, golf.
Wow.
Bonkers. By the way, bonkers ending.
Live or let live.
Golf fans out there are nodding and agreeing.
Yeah.
I did everything humanly possible and watched 0 seconds of the Stanley Cup final. I watched a little bit of the NASCAR race, and I just was like, I'm not watching hockey. Fuck it.
I watched the Stanley Cup final just to watch McCarr be McCarr because he's fucking amazing. And I know the Rangers wanted to trade up for him, which makes it worse.
Do you remember the stupid Rangers Conn Smythe conversation we were having a while ago, and I said,
yeah,
it doesn't matter because Cale McCarr is going to win anyway.
Yeah, well, guess what? He is that good.
That's really fun. It's funny that Hedl Zibanejad conversation is probably the most engaging and entertaining Ranger playoff talk that we had, and the talk was ended with, nah, this talk doesn't matter because it's going to be Cale McCarr.
And it was, and he's that
good. And it was.
He's insane, and the Flyers didn't take him. Thank God. Thank God. They just let them sit there. It's been a crazy sports weekend in general. I mean, New York sports is in a weird place. The Yankees get no hit. I happen to be there. Only 318 in history. Very strange. Then Kyrie's like, you know what? I'm out of here.
Oh, my God. Now the best part of it, the absolute chef's kiss, is him being like, "Yeah, I'll leave $36 million on the table to sign a $6 million contract."
Fucking kidding me?
He's gonna want that, and you know he wants all that money in like crypto.
Crypto has to be.
There's no way he's not a crypto bro.
He's getting NFTs out of his ass. It's crypto.com. Like the Staples Center is
He's getting NFTs of his ass
for sure. He has to be. They're worth something. I'm sure he'll figure it out. Yeah. And Kevin, like the Knicks drafted, or the Knicks did something. They didn't draft anything. The Knicks.
Following, man, I know we're going to have him on later this summer for sure, because we need the annual State of MSG podcast. But if you guys weren't following the Knicks wall during that Thursday night kerfuffle, it's just, it was really fascinating to see a different sport fan base try to go through what hockey fans go through all the time, which is the Knicks made a trade and we didn't know for what for 3 hours.
Which it happens. I'm so used to it. I was like, what, you guys aren't used to this? And then people were adding, my whole time it was just people adding Woj. It's like, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. You can't get your trade immediately. It's not somebody just getting the message from the league. Like, yep. Cool. Congratulations. Man.
Incredible.
I don't know, like, this isn't a basketball podcast. I don't really know what's going on with the Knicks, but I will say if they spend that money on a player who's really not, like, a top 25 player, and you just kind of gave away some draft picks for later picks, probably a bad move. Just said.
Well, it's, first of all, you're absolutely right. We're not a Knicks podcast.
Not a Knicks podcast.
We are a big assets boy podcast, and it's important for us to understand how an MSG-based franchise looks at their assets, because whether we think it's it's not one-to-one, no chance. But you can take some stuff from what Leon Rose does and apply it to Chris Drury. And there are two ways to look at the Knicks essentially getting three super protected first-round picks. They're still first-round picks, and NBA teams still want them. But are those picks going to be used to get a player, or are those picks going to be used to get rid of players? And it's, I say that to say that Jack Johnson just won a Stanley Cup. Super curious to see where Patrick Nemeth wins the Stanley Cup next year.
It is super curious. I refrained from tweeting about Jack Johnson the past couple of weeks because I did make a charity in his name saying how bad he was as a New York Ranger and as a hockey player, and he won a Stanley Cup as he was playing.
To be fair, in the Rangers' defense, if they had Cale Makar, Devontae's, Bowen Byram, Sam Girard as their top four, I would have felt a lot more comfortable icing Jack Johnson. Really would have.
Fair. Totally fair point. Just, it's Jack Johnson raises the cup, and I just kind of shake my head. Like, damn. And I know the rest of his team is insane. All four lines for the Avalanche were buzzing. I think the Tampa Bay Lightning had one shot in the first 13 minutes of the third period where they're down one. It's like, woof.
I saw the tweets about that, but again, did not see the game because it's crazy. I think it was because overloaded. The Rangers being involved in the playoffs just made the playoffs a lot more stressful. And once they were over, it's like, you know,
this sounds like what I'm about to say is a joke, but I promise it's not. The Rangers season ended and I went to therapy. Like that's where, like, again, I promise it's not, but Greg and I podcasted every other day covering the New York Rangers, and it was over. I said to myself, I need to see a therapist. And I went. Take care of yourself, everybody. It's important.
For me, the Rangers season ended, and I had the like come to Jesus moment that there's a chance, a good chance, that the New York Mets are just a good baseball team. Therefore, I couldn't even get too worked up and upset about anything going on in Petland.
I don't blame you for not watching the finals. I don't blame you.
I just can't do it. I can't do it. To be fair, it's not like I watched every minute of the finals the previous 2 years when the Rangers weren't making the playoffs. My relationship with hockey is it's Ranger-based. And if the Rangers if the Rangers aren't intrinsically involved, I got news for you, Ryan. Outside of, like, Twitter clips, I'm not watching, like, Dodgers-Braves either. If the Mets aren't involved, I don't really care.
What I want to know is who people have this time. Where do you find it? Like, hey, I watched three NHL games last night, including on the West Coast. It's like, dude, I need to sleep. I can't watch Cal McCarr.
I have to wake up and watch the highlights. I can't use that excuse. I just told you I watched a College World Series, a golf tournament, and some NASCAR. I was, like, actively avoiding the Stanley Cup.
Fall Guys is free now. I'm trying to play. That's it.
I'm just saying, it was a bonkers ending. If you guys don't know how the Travelers Championship ended, you need to look it up. The guy went to the 18th hole with a one-shot lead. He hit his second shot into the bunker, and then he essentially missed on his third shot and remained in the bunker and lost by a stroke.
That sucks.
It was amazing.
I want to talk a little bit about Artemi Panarin. You might have heard of him.
The obsessive compulsive one.
The OCD himself. Just let's get this out of the way. I have to tell you, if I was the target of a Russian hit, I likely would claim that I had OCD, and that would be my reason why I didn't have a smartphone. Just saying. That would be my reason. That's it. He said in a quote to a Russian newspaper that the reason he doesn't have a smartphone is because he's been diagnosed with OCD, and that's why he lives without a phone for 2 months this year, and it really hinders his lifestyle. Okay, Panarin, totally get it. I just hope people who are out there, who are on the internet, we're going to talk about excuses in Panarin for the next, 5-6 minutes for a second. And if any of you use OCD as a reason why Artemi Panarin was not, quote-unquote, up to your standards in the playoffs, I will fight you personally. I think that's, I cannot make that more clear. It is not a reason why Artemi Panarin wasn't the all-star you wanted him to be in the playoffs. That all being said, I think I tweeted this over the weekend and I've been thinking about it a lot. Ryan Strom we haven't decided if he's having pelvis surgery just yet, but it's up for discussion, meaning he's hurt or injured enough where he needs to possibly have that scoped out for a surgery. And he played the entire time with Artemi Panarin. He said in the post-game or the postseason interviews that he heard it at the end of the season and then, well, he played the whole fucking playoffs with it, and he played with Artemi Panarin, and there were a lot of times where Artemi Panarin would skate down the left side, and Kopp, who I think was on a bum knee, and Strom, who had a broken hip and pelvis, was skating down, and Panarin looked left, he looked right, and no one was there for him to get the puck. On top of that, Greg, and we can go back and talk about this in a second, I understand that there wasn't this back check feature for Panarin, he wasn't this two-way player, he had a lot of turnover pucks. Again, he's thinking the game at a higher level than other players on the ice. He's probably thinking players are going to get where he passes the puck. Those lead to bad turnovers. There was also shoot the puck from the blue line. This also happened. Listen, say what you want about Gerard Gallant. We said a lot over the past couple weeks, especially with Kaapo Kakko. Totally get that. But Artemi Panarin had to change his play style to play the way Gerard Gallant wanted to play in the playoffs. He didn't go out there and just do things from the blue line. He didn't just shoot things. He wasn't Artemi Panarin a lot of the time. He had to change his game. Now, is that his fault or the coach's fault? Is it his fault for not adapting? Is it the coach's fault for trying to cage Artemi Panarin's game? Maybe. It could be both. It could be a mix. What I'm saying is, and the one thing I want to get to the point is, Artemi Panarin had a fine playoffs where, yes, he wasn't the all-out and all-be-all superstar, who I still think was playing injured in some way. I think that whole line was playing injured. But to have the gall, Gregory, to even say that there's a chance he could be moved or request out, a person who took less money to come to New York, who clearly loves it here in such a way, request out for what? For what? Is Chris Drury going to go call and be like, you know what, Artemi Panarin, you're one of the 10 best players in the NHL, and we've decided your $11.6 million cap hit is just too much for us. How dare you even write that on paper? It's unbelievable.
Well, to me, my biggest gripe with the article is the insinuation that you're bringing up here. It's totally fine. And listen, we did it too. I remember remember back after game 4 of the Pittsburgh series, I got on this podcast and told you, and I said, at some point, if Artemi Panarin is injured, it's irresponsible for him to be playing and you have to take him out of the lineup.
Right.
It's not saying the New York Rangers are a better team without Artemi Panarin in the lineup. It's saying that that version of Artemi Panarin was not going to be enough to help the New York Rangers if they kept making him play a certain way. And that's fine to say without that having to be interpreted as, oh, I think the Rangers should get rid of Artemi Panarin. Chris Drury can say he expected Artemi Panarin to play better in the playoffs. That's true. I think we all did. Like, that's not saying he's a bad player. Saying you were unimpressed or underwhelmed with Panarin's playoff performance, it's just a statement of fact at a certain point? And again, there are a lot of reasons for that. Panarin, was he 100% healthy? I'm not sold. He definitely ended the regular season with a back injury. He looked banged up in the playoffs. After that, we know Ryan Strome, his bed buddy, was playing at 50% tops with a pelvis injury where it felt like he was getting stabbed in the side every time he stagated. That's going to impact Artemi Panarin. You mentioned Andrew Kopp not playing well. Also true. He wasn't playing with great line mates. When he was moved up into the best he looked was on the power play, of course, because go figure, he's playing with four other healthy guys. Well, three if you, again, what does Strome do on the power play? Nobody knows. But it's to take something that probably is true, with which is Chris Drury has told other people, man, kind of expected more from Artemi Panarin. That doesn't mean that's where the conversation ended. That doesn't mean that's where Chris Drury goes, can't wait to get this guy off my team. Being disappointed with how someone played and then making the leap, the gigantic leap to, oh, maybe he gets moved. No. Nothing about the first statement implies the second statement is possibly true. Could it be? Yeah. Is it? No. It's that simple. To do it, you're, at that point, you know what it is, Ryan? It is lazy journalism from a guy who looks like he doesn't want to be on the Rangers beat, which is weird.
Agreed. And it's just this situation where Chris Drury could have said, you know, I just expected Panarin to play better this season. In that tone.
Yeah, imagine for a second, Ryan. Let me transport you somewhere. Imagine Max Scherzer in a playoff game gives up four runs in six innings. And after the game, Buck Showalter says, yeah, I didn't expect that from Max Scherzer. You think New York media is then going to write, well, they want Scherzer traded. That's what that statement must possibly mean. No, it's just a simple fact. If Artemi Panarin played better, the Rangers would have played better. Sure. Are the contributing factors for why Panarin played poorly that he was hurt, his line mates were hurt, and every team had to focus in on Artemi Panarin in the playoffs? Totally possible. It's unreal. I don't understand how we got here. Why are we writing this? I'm all about it's almost, you know, it's almost like some people on the beat, specifically ones that have not been on this show, they realize the other writers on their beat, they realize they can't compete with the other writers on the beat, so they have to try to do something. And it's like when Brooks does it, it's almost funny.
Well, if Brooks wrote this, I'd be like, okay, all right. Well, I get it. We're not voting in it. We're not voting for man. Oh boy, Brooks. Love you, buddy, but you got to hang in your shoes.
It's so funny because I'll touch on this very lightly. What Brooks is trying to say is that reporters need to be back in the locker room, and I think we and anybody
we agree.
That covers the team would feel that way. Agreed. But like, you're protesting it with the way he protested it makes it seem like the reason they aren't back in the locker room is because of the other writers and not the NHL. And then you lose everything with a mask argument, buddy. Like everything.
Yeah.
You wear a fucking mask. If you don't want to do the job, don't do it. I don't care.
I'm with you. And to lose your rights, voting rights forever, that sucks. Especially for Brooks, who's been a prestigious writer forever. Forever.
He is a Hall of Famer.
That's correct. So. Yeah, he literally is a Hall of Famer. He's fucking awesome, man, at his job. If you disagree with me, which, by the way, if you're listening to Ryan, Brooks is not awesome at his job. Think about the last time Brooks wrote something and how angry or emotional you got in response. That's on
it
you.
Made you
he's,
feel.
He's amazing at his job. He's fucking awesome.
Also, just truly incredible. I saw there were some what if the Islanders trade for Josh Anderson rumors flying out.
Woo!
There. And I literally started daydreaming about what that column's going to look like.
I can't wait for that column. The best part about Larry is I can't wait to click his shit. I really can't. As soon as it's posted, I'm like, ooh, like new Larry column? Gotta click that. And that's my whole day. I can't stand it. My brain's just bloated. If Brooks wrote that, I'd have no problem. But it's just like,
well, if Brooks, well, that's the other thing about this, right? If Brooks wrote it, you would know it came from the Ranger organization. Maybe definitely not Chris Drury, because it seems like he doesn't have Drury's ear. But you know that he still has fans in the Rangers front office somewhere and in the organization somewhere. So if Brooks wrote it, whether you agree with it or not, you at least know it's coming from a point of relatability to the team. For Drury to do it and be like, yeah, I've heard other people in the NHL say, not, well, I don't know whose name I said. You know whose name I meant to say. Arthur Staple, him, his name. For him to write, yeah, other people in the NHL have heard whispers. From who? Chris Drury? Chris Drury whispers?
You think Panarin?
Who does he whisper to?
First of all, Panarin doesn't have a phone. He can't text you. He can't whisper anything. Who's next to him?
I just, but also, it's just, it's so bonkers. The other, God, the other people that were in that grouping, just, it's really sick.
I'm
going
to
tell
you this episode, is Panarin asking out? No. And prospects with Drew Witt.
Sources reporting to Blue Shirts Breakaway that Artemi Panarin will be a New York Ranger next season.
Yeah, I feel pretty strongly in reporting that. I think opening night, Panarin will be a New York Ranger. I'm going to call that one. Call my shot. Also, well, one more thing that I'm done. Mammoth contract? What do you mean mammoth contract? Yes, I know it's the second most in the league. The dude puts up 100-point seasons. What are we doing? He's worth the money. He literally makes the team go on most nights. I know it wasn't the playoffs. On most nights, the guy just wins games on accident. He looks like shit. And you're like, you look up and he's like, oh, Artemi Panarin has 3 points. How'd that happen? What's going on? So stupid.
Listen, it got us talking about it, which essentially is what he wanted to do.
Correct. But it is the offseason. And I have to do, yeah. I have to, I can't let that one sit out there without just sitting right there.
In his defense, he's been acting like it's been the offseason since he got here.
Fair.
So he's in a role. He's in a groove.
I totally, oh boy. We are going to talk to Drew in a couple minutes about prospect rankings and where the Rangers will draft, because not in the first, or who they'll target in the second, or so on. They won't have those picks either because they will trade Patrick Nemeth for them. So I don't know, why we're having Drew on, but we'll figure it out. That being said, let's do some 5-star questions while we are here. I think I asked you this question last week. It says again, is this Mets team good? Is it good?
Yeah, it's unsettling. The stat over the weekend that really hammered the point home is someone was like, this win over the Marlins clinches a winning June for the Mets. The first time that's happened since 2012, Ryan.
Crazy. This is from Tom Hirsch Jr. based on how the Cup final went, how do you think the Rangers would have done against Colorado had they not blown Game 3, won Game 5 versus Tampa Bay, and had 2 days of rest before the start? Would Igor have made it close, or was it going to be total domination by the Avs no matter what? I think Igor would have made it semi-close, but I probably would have taken Avs in like 5 or 6.
The Avs controlled possession in just about almost all of the games of the playoffs from what I saw, again, on Twitter. Wasn't watching, so I'm only reacting to what the
stats,
fancy little graphs and whatever.
Graphs.
But if we're living in a world where the Rangers all of a sudden were scoring enough at 5-on-5 to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, we would assume then that scoring would carry over to some extent to the Stanley Cup, and then... So if we're living in a world where the Rangers are scoring at 5-on-5 and Igor Shesterkin is playing well, I don't know. Anything is possible. That's the thing. Like, when the Lightning beat the Rangers, did the Lightning look good beating the Rangers?
They never blew the Rangers out. They were fine.
Yeah, they looked like an incomplete team. But the big takeaway from, to me at least, that Rangers series was that the Rangers didn't play well. Not that the Lightning crushed them, destroyed them. And honestly, outside of the 7-0 game, it's not like the Avalanche blew the Lightning out of the water either. I will say firmly, this is one of the few years where the best team in the NHL won. The last team standing is the correct team standing. And I'm not saying the Rangers would have beaten the Avalanche, but from where I sit, I don't know. This is why I don't really like playing these hypothetical games, because if we're playing the hypothetical, then I could also just say that the Rangers were going to score 5 goals a game against Darcy Kemper. Darcy Kemper didn't have to do anything.
He really,
and a lot of that is how the
he really did not.
How the Avalanche played, for sure. I understand that. But the Rangers would have had Igor, who's better than Vasilevskiy. Sorry to break other people's hearts with that. And in this scenario, the Rangers are finally scoring at 5-on-5, which means maybe they can penetrate the Colorado a little bit, but the thing is, once Colorado has the puck, you're not getting it back. They're just fucking, they're so fucking good.
And I was talking about this, I was just ranting to myself, to be honest with you, about how much the Rangers played in the past 3 months. I think they played like 30 games in 45 days in the last 2 months before the playoffs. They had no legs, and Colorado was extra rested, and the speed would have been too much, I think. It's from Hip Hip.
Yeah, again, the correct team won. So that, what do I think the Rangers could or couldn't have done? I don't know. Don't matter. Best team in the NHL won the cup.
There's no arguing that. There are years where you can argue it. This one is not. Hip Hip asks, Kreider is 10th in goals and 14th in points, 84 behind Graves, who is 10th, all time with New York Rangers. When all and said is done, will Kreider have his number retired? I think we've talked about this before. I think if they won a cup, he'd absolutely be retired. If he stays here till he retires, he will also be retired. If he finds a way. He's got to produce for like six more years.
If Chris Drury plays for the New York Rangers for 15 plus seasons, which is possible, then yeah, I think he gets his number. Chris Kreider?
Yeah, you said Drury.
Isn't this funny how this happens? When the times you catch it, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, if Kreider plays 15 plus years with the Rangers, he gets his number retired for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
For sure.
It's not a Yankee situation either. He legitimately earns it. Before we
Well, that's now hold on.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting
You think it's a Yankee situation?
I think it is.
Where he just played for the team for so long that he's just...
They have to retire his number.
They have to because he was here like a Don Mattingly?
Yeah, like, think of the Chris Kreider conversation we're having before he scored 52 goals, Ryan. What was that conversation like?
I'm looking up Yankees retired numbers, and I know it's like 17,000.
It's everybody on the 98 through 2001 teams. Chris Kreider, the Bernie Williams of the New York Rangers?
Yeah, I think I love Bernie Williams. I love him. And
sure. Shouldn't have his number retired.
Should not have his number retired. I was thinking that this weekend. Just like now.
Yeah, I love Edgardo Alfonso. He might be one of my – he's probably a top five favorite man for me in my lifetime. I am not sitting here saying his number should be retired.
And again, I liked Paul – as a kid, I loved Paul O'Neill. Loved him. I don't get it. I don't think so. Makes sense to me.
It's a conversation we're having now because he scored 50 goals. He had a great playoffs. He did all these great things. It's wonderful. But like Chris Kreider, the hockey player, think of the other important Ranger teams, right? Was he ever more important than Matt Zuccarello? Was he ever more important? Like he was on the same footing as a Derek Brassard on those truly great Ranger teams.
Yeah, and he's probably
fourth. He was never the guy.
He's probably fifth billing. If you like, we're doing a casting of this Rangers team, it'd be Igor, Fox, Panarin, Mika, Kreider.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, buddy, you of all people love shitting on Rick Nash for reasons that are unjustworthy.
Who, me?
But there's a reason why you shit on him. It's because Rick Nash was a super important Ranger player, more important than Chris Kreider. Yeah. Kreider has been here for a very long time, but I will not. Stand in the way of him having his number retired. I will be there.
I think I've started to lean there. He shouldn't have his number retired, but I think it will be.
Well, if he plays 15 plus years with one organization playing as well as Kreider has, I get
that's hard to do. That's really hard to do.
I am here for that. Like if a guy spends his entire career with one team, fine, great, grand, wonderful. But if we wanted to be like the is this guy good enough actually on merit to have his number retired? There's some cracks in that pavement. All I'm saying.
All right. Before we get to our friend Drew Way, listen, I saw Aaron Judge this weekend strike out a couple times. And you know who else struck out last week? Some other judges. Congratulations to them.
Six of them, to be fair. Fuck
them. Six of them, to be fair.
Hot take. Women should have control of their bodies. That's about it.
And with that being said, here's our guest, Drew Way. 1 second. Let's transition.
Women should have control of their bodies. On that note, here's Drew.
Transition. Hey, we're back with our guest, Drew Way. Drew, who came in at the end of that fun time interview with Greg and I just talking to each other. Greg, Drew, resident prospect expert. Welcome back to the show.
It's the best welcome I've ever gotten on any podcast. Speaking about women's rights, the truth, here's Drew. thank you for that.
A true champion.
But no, happy to be here, guys. Thanks for having me. How you both doing?
We're doing okay. A lot of sports in our life, a lot of busy times. The NHL offseason is officially here, so we're in draft mode. But because the Rangers won so much, Drew, and they won the Easter, they got to the Easter Conference Finals and lost to a team that lost in the finals, a dirty, dirty, dirty team. They had to give up their first-round pick to the Winnipeg Jets. That meaning they only have 4 picks in the draft this year. Usually we have you on. It's a very exciting time. We go through all these picks we could have. We have you back on when we talk about players we shouldn't have taken, like Braden Schneider. And and we have, like, we all get angry. It's fun. We have a good time. This year they only have a second round, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth. The second round is 63rd overall. So let's start there. Do you see a scenario where the Rangers trade back into the first whatsoever? Is there any sort of player you could see them trading back into the first 4?
Well, I mean, I would ask you. You're more the insider than I am in terms of if that's something that they're considering doing.
The answer is no. I mean, I just want to hear your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really going to speak to, like, you know, do I think the Rangers will do X or Y? Like, as you know, I get some stuff, but I don't know that. But what I'll say is, like, there are certainly a couple guys that I could see perhaps being available in the late first or early second that could be right up the Rangers' alley and interest them in at least inquiring about what the cost would be for trading up. One thing I really want to say about this draft more than any other I've seen in a while is, like, after, like, the top 12, like, it's really all over the place in terms of where people value different people. And, like, every year there's always a thing like, well, someone that, you know, I have in the late first, you know, Corey Pronman might have in the middle second, and Bob McKenzie might have around. But, like, this year, like, literally there are guys that, like, I've seen ranked anywhere from, like, 20 on one list to 100 on the other. And it's more than just one or two. Like, it's crazy how, like, the variance in rankings among guys ranked anywhere from, like, 15 to 70. And, you know, obviously every year, again, there's that variation. But this year in particular, between just the quality of the draft class and the just the nature of the pandemic and how the pandemic took a year of development away from a lot of people, just adding that much more uncertainty to this class. The long story short of this whole little rant is there are a lot of guys, I bet you, that I have ranked in the first round that'll probably be available in the 60s when the Rangers are making their first selection.
I was going to ask, you seem to answer my follow-up question there, which this is essentially the first, it's still not a normal class, right? Because the last 2 years have been so screwed up with some leagues playing, some other leagues not playing, some leagues not traveling at all, some players playing in college, some others not getting a chance to travel in college. So we're still probably a full year away from a normal draft cycle, right?
Yeah, at least. I mean, this is definitely an odd draft cycle. And like you said, this has now been 2 years where people have been impacted in terms of their development. And, like, another weird thing about this class too is, like, a lot of, like, the most skilled players are bad at skating. And, you know, the way the NHL has morphed is where, you know, you can make the argument that skating is the quality that these teams seem to value the most. And so the best way to perhaps, in my opinion, at this point, to get a value in the draft is grab one of these skilled kids who isn't the best skater, but their issues are mechanical more than, like, you know, fast for a slow twitch muscle fibers.
So, like, Cocco and stick them with, just like that.
Yeah, and then stick them with, like, a Barb Underhill type who is a skating coach and who's proven to make people at least average NHL skaters. And, you know, flourish. And, like, my guy this year is, you know, Rucker McGroarty. You know, he's a U.S. National Development Program center. I have him at, like, 14, I think. I've seen him as low as, you know, 45 or so. He's on, like, easily one of the most physically gifted players in this class. Smart as hell. Huge work ethic. He's a poor skater. And in my views, like, most of his skating issues are mechanical, something that if you get him with a really good skating coach, you can at least make him an average skater. And if you can make him, like, an average skater, like, legitimately, he could be a John Tavares type. Like, you know, obviously I'm being a bit hyperbolic, but that sort of mold where two-way, can do a bit of everything, really talented, and is an okay skater, but won't blow you away.
So
let me ask. Oh, sorry, Ryan. I just want to ask a hypothetical. I want to sneak one in there. This is just three dudes talking, right? So this isn't based off anything we've heard or any kind of skepticism. But considering the variance in this draft, but how much you do like some certain players, say the Rangers had an opportunity to trade into the 20 to 25 range at the cost of Nils Lundqvist. Would you feel comfortable doing that?
I mean, it would all depend on who's there, right? If it's just in a if you're talking before the draft and we don't know who's there, no, I wouldn't. But if it's draft day and it's, you know, pick 21 and a Rucker McGroarty or a Frank Nazar or like a Matthew Savoie is there, then yes, I'd do it.
Interesting. Well, can we talk a little bit about the top of the draft? I know the Rangers will not be there, but I would like to get like Shane Wright. I know he's a great quality prospect. He's probably going to go to Montreal, right? But he hasn't been like a, I guess, bona fide number one. Or am I wrong about that? And I'm just falling for clickbait.
Yeah. You're right, and the issue is here, and why Shane Wright's so polarizing is as an underage rookie. So he had like the exceptional status, so could join the OHL a year early, like John Tavares, like Sean Day, like Connor McDavid. And in his first year there as an underage player, he beat Connor McDavid's numbers, and so everyone was getting so excited. And then he lost the year with the pandemic, and this year he was fine and was streaky, but was pretty underwhelming come playoff time. And the long story short on him is, you know, the skill, the hockey sense, the work ethic, the two-way ability is all there to warrant him going number one. Some people, in terms, I hate player comps, but some people throw out like the Patrice Bergeron type. Like that's a ridiculous comp, but he is like a very smart, skilled two-way player who can be a dominant two-way player in the NHL. That said, I think the criticism is fair when you look at him. One of the reasons why he was so successful so young, right now he's 6'1", 198 is his, you know, height and weight listing. I hit that underage year of his where he broke, you know, Connor McDavid's, you know, point totals. He was 6'1", 175. In other words, he was super physically mature for a 15-year-old. And so perhaps the thought is some of the reason why he was so successful so young is because he was just so much more physically advanced for someone his age than normal.
God. Part of all this conversation too, Drew, is because that Czech kid has just had the year of his life, right?
Well, that's the funny thing about the Czech kid, Juraj Slafkovský, is he had the Olympics and the national tournaments of his life, but he was pretty shit in terms of he played for TPS in Liga. Kapokako's numbers in Liga his draft year were far, far superior to Juraj Slafkovský's. And so it's in terms of like him having the year of his life, that's clickbait. That is people just looking at what he's done in the big, you know, high profile national tournaments, which of course are important. That's, you know, best on best. How does this kid perform under high pressure, stuff like that? So he's, in my opinion, it's a three player top tier, and it's Slafkovský, Logan Cooley, and Shane Wright on that top tier. So no doubt he's on that top tier. If he went number one, I wouldn't blink an eye, but it's definitely hyperbolic to be like, he's had the year of his life because his league play in Liga in Finland was very underwhelming.
So where does Shane Wright compare to the prospect status of Lafreniere? Just out of curiosity.
He's not Lafreniere. He hasn't had even near the production that Lafreniere had in Lafreniere's draft year. If I were to like rank like the recent number one picks and stuff like that, he'd probably be, you know, definitely behind Jack Hughes, definitely behind Lafreniere, probably slightly ahead of Kapokako. So, you know, maybe on in that tier.
Interesting. Okay. So,
but again, like, and to be clear, like when people hear me say like on par with Kapokako, people might be thinking, well, look at what he's done in the NHL. He's underwhelming, blah, 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 blah. It's just looking at how they were in their draft year. And in Kapokako's draft year, he was amazing. He was every bit worn. You know, anyone that says, oh, he was the wrong pick at two, shut the fuck up. Like, you're being an idiot. There was literally zero argument at the time of the draft to take anyone other than Kapokako at two.
Yeah, I mean, we all agree that. I know Kapokako hasn't turned out to be the player everyone expected, blah, blah, blah. You know how I feel.
But again, there's a difference between you made a mistake in the draft and you didn't develop the player properly. And people who think that the Rangers made a mistake in the draft as opposed to they developed him improperly are idiots and should be ignored.
Yeah, the Rangers drafted the right player. It hasn't turned out the way we all thought it was. It's not the Sacramento Kings having the fourth pick and passing on Jaden.
Right, exactly.
What are we doing?
Or the Minnesota Timberwolves passing on Steph Curry twice.
Well, the Timberwolves one's worse because they didn't just pass on Curry. They drafted two point guards. They drafted the same position. And well, if you want to make the Rubio argument in hindsight, I was listening to a podcast earlier this week, and it's like the Rubio hype, it would have been weird to draft a player over Rubio. I get that. But you took Johnny Flynn.
Yeah.
Who was not great at Syracuse.
You can get Fitz on to bitch and moan about Flynn and the Syracuse system all day long,
I'm sure. You know I will.
But speaking of systems, let's get right into the Rangers system, which is, I wouldn't say stacked. It was stacked a couple years ago because of the high-end prospects. But really, the talk of the town is Brendan Hoffman. I think he's going to have another year of development. It's not going to be in the AHL because he is still not too young to be in the AHL. He'll be 20 years old next year. What can we expect out of Hoffman? I know he's had a tremendous goal-scoring year. I know he's kind of had the great upside. I think you call him as like a discount Zach Hyman when we drafted him. Seems like he's had a little bit more of scoring oomph. What's the development step taken this year?
I don't think I called him a discount Zach Hyman. I said he was in the player archetype of Zach Hyman.
My
just
apologies.
To be clear. Yeah, I was very pro that pick. I was trying to explain that, hey, this is a good player that we just took in this spot, and people freaking out on him needed to chill. But he's tough because he's proven everything he needs to prove at the OHL level. And so, like, you don't want to see him go back to the OHL because, like, what else can he do there? But it's, you know, do you really think he's going to legitimately make the Rangers roster at a camp and then be an everyday starter? Because that's what you need him to be, because you can't send him to the AHL. And some people have asked me, like, oh, once, you know, he makes the team, can he then be sent to the AHL? The answer is no. He would have to go to the OHL. And it's, you know, it sucks. I hate this agreement between the NHL and the CHL. Like, I understand why it's there. It's there to help the CHL and allow them to prosper and stuff like that. But it's players like Brendan Hoffman who are too good for the, you know, the CHL, but probably not quite ready for the NHL, you know, really suffer in times like this. Ideally speaking, he'd be playing first line wing at the AHL in Hartford and thriving, but it's now he's kind of stuck in no man's land. So I don't even really know what to say, like what to expect from him. I mean, he should dominate if he's in the OHL, but it's almost like, okay, you've been there, done that before. So is he going to be bored? Is he going to keep working? It's, you know, a lot of that's on him as a person and his coaching and what the Rangers put around him in terms of, you know, off ice development and support.
It would be really funny in a sick and only this podcast kind of way if they spend this entire summer saying how Kraftsoff is back, he's the guy, and then Hoffman beats out Kraftsoff for a top nine.
Oh, please
spot.
Don't do this.
I mean, I tell you what, if Hoffman legitimately beat out Kraftsoff for a top nine spot, then that means he was phenomenal, because I understand it's fun to meme and crap on Kraftsoff, but he's still a really, really talented player who's proven he's also a two-way player.
Yeah, so let's talk about players who might actually make the roster next year. Is there a player outside, like obviously we talked about Hoffman, is there another player that has a chance from the Rangers system to be a fourth liner?
Well, I mean, it depends on kind of what you mean by the Rangers system or whatnot. But I mean, the Rangers signed Gustav Rydahl out of Sweden. And my guess is, based on their cap situation and based on the quality of player he is, like, he is the guy that the Rangers want, or at least that Chris Drury wants to win the fourth line center role. And in terms of like what his, and he's talented enough to play fourth line in the NHL. I'm adamant about that. This was a good no risk signing by the Rangers. And in terms of the kind of game he is, like, he's a big boy. I think he's like 6'3", 6'4". He's tough as nails. He's a real agitator. There's clips of him where it kind of like almost like a Brad Marchand who can actually stick up for himself, where like he'll piss off the other team and then laugh in their face as they get pissed off at him. But the difference between him and Marchand is, you know, he could also then kick the crap out of the opponent, where Marchand runs away and lets one of his teammates play that role. But he's also skilled. I relate him kind of to like a Brian Boyle type, where he's a big physical dude. He's more willingly physical than Boyle ever was, but probably not as naturally gifted as Boyle. Like, people forget Boyle was a first round pick and actually had tremendous hands and pretty high skill. And then ended up settling into a fourth liner. But Rydahl's got that kind of game where he's a two-way player. He can play, make a bit, he has decent hands, really good defensive player, really tough and an agitator. And he'd be he'd be a fan favorite really quick if he's able to win that fourth line center role.
Well, I'll say this. I said it. We haven't talked about him a lot for, you know, reasons. You don't spend a lot of time talking about fourth line signings this far away from training camp, but it's what I said the day the Rangers signed him. I'll just repeat it again. You're not convincing a 27-year-old assistant captain who is Swedish playing hockey in the Swedish Hockey League to come to North America unless you make him at least some kind of promise that he is the favorite to make this team out of training camp. Like, he just wouldn't, he wouldn't have a reason to come here. The money isn't better. So you have to make it worth his while to come here, which is why I'm with you 100%. I see him at least, if not in pen, like I've written it in pencil so many times that it's going to be hard to erase Gustav Rydahl being the Rangers' fourth line center.
Yeah, and he would deserve it. Like, it's not just a situation where, like, we made him this promise, we have to stick by it. Like, he legitimately has the talent to play the fourth line center role. It's just a matter of, you know, adjusting to this country, adjusting to the smaller ice, all that stuff. And then, you know, the obvious answer to Ryan, I think, Ryan, you were the one that posed the question, is, you know, Nils Lundqvist, Zach Jones. Both of those are skilled enough to play with the Rangers roster. No question.
Yeah,
but it's... Yeah, one of them's making it, and the other's probably getting traded, and I'm already preparing to be pissed off about whatever that trade return's going to be.
Totally get it. Is Will Cooley, is he anything yet? What's where are we at with him?
Yeah, I mean, he's a really good player. I mean, he I was, you know, moderately high on him coming into last season. I think I ranked him like 10th in our, you know, organizational prospect rankings, and they went out and had a really good year in the OHL. I mean, people love throwing the Tom Wilson comparison around because he compared himself to Tom Wilson. And I've said this on this pod, and I'll say it again. He's not Tom Wilson. He can't skate like Tom Wilson. One of the big things that makes Tom Wilson who is he can skate like the frickin' wind at that size. That's not Will Cooley. That said, I mean, this is a 6'3", 6'4", 210-pound kid who has a decent scoring touch in front of the net, is as, you know, tough as anyone, and is an adequate skater and decent enough hands to do other things. So it's... He's someone that at his peak could probably be an effective third liner who can agitate, can protect you and play a two-way game and provide depth scoring. Do I think he's going to make the team next year? I think that largely depends on who we sign in the offseason. If we go out and make another, you know, Dryden Hunt signing or two, he's probably not making the team. But if they purposely don't really try to sign many depth players hoping that he makes it, then yeah, he could probably beat out some of the lesser end prospects fighting against him in that role.
I feel like Bobby T is going to be a name we see next year. I can't say his last name. Is Trevino? I think it is.
Trevino, yeah. So he, to make the lazy comparison that Ranger fans are aware of, he's like a Matt Zuccarello type where he's small. Again, I think you can see a trend here where the Rangers like guys that are smart and have a two-way game. You know, he plays, he's good defensively, but again, he's tiny, but like Zuccarello, he has no problem walking up to Zdeno Chara and attempting to face wash him, but obviously can never reach him because he's a foot shorter than him. But point is, like with the Zuccarello comparison, he's a playmaker, he's a two-way player, he's fearless, he's an agitator. The big difference is he's obviously not the passer that Zuccarello was. Zuccarello is probably one of the better pure passers in the game, but he's certainly a more willing shooter than Zuccarello is. And, you know, he doesn't have the upside. You know, he's not going to be a first line player the way Zuccarello proved to be in his career, but he can certainly be at his peak, a middle six, you know, two way forward who can provide some depth playmaking and scoring. Most likely, I think he's, you know, third, fourth line tweener who, again, you know, he can play on the penalty kill and he can provide some depth scoring, depth playmaking.
Well, we have to remember who the Rangers head coach is here, and it's Gerard Gallant, who has famously said he doesn't like playing young players on his fourth line. So are you saying in a scenario in which Vitali Kravtsov is not moved, is there a guy you would be most comfortable saying, I can see player X being the guy the Rangers slide into their top nine because they tried to sign, they just don't have the money to make a big serious move?
I mean, it's hard to say, and I think so much of that answer revolves around what do we do with the second line center. Like, if we decide Filip Hedl is in fact the second line center, and goodbye Strome, goodbye Andrew Kopp, then I think that opens up a lot more options in terms of who we potentially could slide into the top nine. But if we keep one of Strome or Kopp and Kravtsov makes the lineup, then there's no room for anyone to make the top nine, unless I'm, you know, completely missing something.
You're not. It has to be Combs. Strome and Kopp don't sign long term. Which I'm assuming they actually won't do that. I don't know. We're gonna get to that another day once that gets closer. But I don't see
obligatory Paul Stastny reference. Just have to say his name.
Yep,
have to
I get it.
Going.
Totally understand.
Yeah, I hope that God, we don't re-sign Strome. Like, I love him, and I understand why people want him back, but I'm going to be so upset if we re-sign him for
a two-year deal,
anywhere close.
I'd clap. I'll put it that way.
If he took a two-year deal at $5 million, I wouldn't even give him 1 year at $6 million. Like, there's no need to.
I don't know. I like him more than Kopp, and I've been flamed by a couple people that I really respect.
I think it's fine to like both. Like, Kopp is better two-way player, Strome is better offensive, and he pairs with Panarin. And you know, the knock against Kopp is like, okay, the first year you have this offensive production is the year of your UFA. Like, congratulations, Jerome James. I think that I have no interest paying 5.5 plus per season for either of them. Just, I would much rather roll Hedl as your second line center. Take that chance. Find someone to play the third line center who can provide some depth scoring, but also play the penalty kill, and hope that people develop properly. Enough with this bringing in random ass veterans, and then they end up clogging roster spots for prospects that we're hoping to develop.
I can't do anything more than 3 years for either of them. I can't. It doesn't matter.
Paul Stastny.
Yes.
Stastny.
Will Lieber Hayek be on this team next year? Is he going to be somehow finding a way to paddle down into the lineup?
He's RFA, right? I would say no. I can't imagine they actually qualify him, right?
I don't know. I've been fooled before.
How about this one, Drew? A more uplifting question for you. Let's play best case scenario. Realistically speaking, what guy at 63 excites you the most? Realistically speaking, not some doomsday scenario where a guy you have ranked in your top 20 slides back and back and back. I'm talking about a guy legitimately ranked around that spot, maybe not unanimously, but enough other places that you're thinking, well, if that guy's there at 63, this is actually quite a good deal.
Yeah, and I understand your question. And I, again, before I answer, we'll reiterate that this year there are legitimately people ranked, you know, that I have between 20 and 30 that I bet you will be available at 63. And so I'll do two things. First, I'll throw out a couple names that I do have in those 20s that I think could easily slide to 63, just so everyone's aware of them if they fall. And then I'll give you one or two people that I actually have ranked in that range. The first guy is a Russian forward prospect that's dynamically skilled and wonderfully gifted, named Gleb Trikazov. And he plays in the MHL in Russia. And so insert all of the Russian players were always an issue being drafted, because the quote unquote Russian factor means they were worried that, you know, KHL teams would sign them to lucrative deals and it'd be hard to come over, this and that. Okay, now insert the fact of what's going on in the world with Russia. So there's a lot of issues with Russian players, and a lot of them might fall. On top of that, this is a player where, you know, I have him at 22, I believe. I've seen him ranked as high as 15 or 16. He's ranked that high generally by stats people in the prospecting community, because he's put up some unbelievable stats in the MHL. But Bob McKenzie and those more traditional pundits, who are usually better gauges of where players will actually go, all have him in the mid or second round, possibly even later. So he's someone that, if he's available, you know, he could slide there. I have him at 22, and he's phenomenally talented. Another kid is a defenseman for the U.S. development program. And I should note, like, I know for an absolute fact that the Rangers have pretty much lived in Michigan this year in terms of scouting the U.S. development program team.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think of who the general manager is, Jacob Trouba. That
exactly.
Makes perfect sense in the world.
Exactly. So did you just say Jacob Trouba?
Yeah. Yes. What, you think I'm kidding?
Yeah, he's the GM.
He's the GM.
All right, but okay, so point is beyond any, you know, fathom of a doubt, the Rangers are infatuated with this U18 U.S. development program team, and they should be, because this team was phenomenal. And there's a defenseman named Lane Hudson, who is 5'8", 160 pounds. And you think of that, you think, oh, he must be all offense, no defense. He actually might be one of the best stick defenders in the entire draft class. He's small, so obviously he can push it around, but he legitimately is really good defensively and dynamic as all hell offensively, and he's a leader. He was the captain of this team. And if it helps, his agent was passing around these notes from his doctor at the combine and stuff, saying that like multiple doctors have said that they actually expect him to grow a couple inches still. And so he drafted him at 5'8" because he's a 5'8" defenseman, right? Because he's a 5'8" defenseman, he's probably going in the second round. He's got the skill and the talent to be a lottery pick, no problem whatsoever. So, say you get him the second round and he actually does grow a couple inches, like now you got this no brainer top 15 kid in the second round. So he's someone that, I mean, if he's there in the beginning of the second round, I trade up for him, and he very likely to drop.
I love this guy just going to draft preps being like, look, my doctor says I'm gonna be 6 foot. That's fucking amazing.
I don't know if it's, but it was pretty funny.
I'll say this though, Drew, before you continue, I don't think there's anyone that's ever appeared on this podcast that is more just draft the best player available guy than myself. However, a year in which the Rangers have one pick in the first three rounds of this draft, I swear to fucking God, if they take a defenseman, I'm going to have a conniption.
Yeah. Well, I'll then give you a couple more. There's a prospect who I named as, one of my finalists for the Ty Smith Memorial Trophy, named Luca Delbel Belouz. He's a center for Mississauga in the OHL. I have him in the late 20s. I've seen him ranked anywhere from early 20s to 70. And he is someone where he didn't put up a lot of numbers. And so that's why he's actually probably going to go in the second round easily. But in terms of just physical raw skills, he's a lottery pick. And he could do it all. He's got a wicked shot. Perhaps nobody in this class is better at like that Artemi Panarin, Adam Fox pass where it's like no look, thread it in between three defenders and it goes right onto the tape of his teammate than Bel Belouz is. And he's also got a high motor. Like sometimes these skilled kids, they'll drop because they don't work hard. No, he works really hard. He's actually a pretty good defensive player too. It's just, his pure production wasn't great, so he might fall. And so he's someone. Another kid that at the beginning of this draft year was in the top 10 and then unfortunately got freaking lymphoma is Ivan. I even struggle with this last name. Miroshenko. Ivan Miroshenko. It was top 10 on talent. He was top 10 coming in this year, struggled mightily, started falling down draft boards. And then it was revealed, well, he's struggling because he has freaking lymphoma. He's Russian. So insert what I said about Russian players before, and he's recovering, cancer survivor. I think someone will take a swing on him in the late first round because it's good PR. Plus he's a really good player, but he's someone where he could fall obviously. And then in terms of people who might actually who I have ranked in this range that I want to point out, you got Greg's cousin, Devin Kaplan. From the U.S. development program, he's a winger. I mean, honestly, I think there'll be better players than him available. I know some love him, like George Bremski, who helps us with the rankings. He actually has Kaplan as a late first rounder. And I see it because he's got a good overall game and decent size and stuff like that. But he's not necessarily my cup of tea. I really only bring him up because his last name is Kaplan.
Good blood, but I wouldn't trust the Kaplan on skates. Not exactly a... Not our thing. Listen, we hit the lottery with one good Jew. A second one ain't going to cut it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, one defenseman that I feel like Greg would love, I'm going to just leave that comment alone, is Maverick Lemieux. He is a 6'7", 200-pound defenseman playing in the QMJHL. I actually don't think he's all that good, but I just remember how much fun Greg had with freaking giant Moritz Seider a few years ago. And you're like, I'm a big Moritz guy, even though you knew nothing about him other than he was big and could hit hard. Here's a 6'7", 200-pound.
You know who was fucking right about Moritz Seider, though, buddy?
Absolutely.
Sometimes I got to tell you, Drew, when we are finally implemented in the Rangers front office and that we have perfect mix where you're going to be the very smart director of scouting and you're going to give me all these guys – I'm going to see a name on a sheet of paper and I'm just going to go, this fucking guy, that's a guy. And we're going to draft him and he's going to be the best of them.
Yep.
That's all it takes.
But a couple other names quickly for you. There's a winger who can play either side. And, you know, I know the Rangers fans are like, oh, we need a center. Well, we actually need wingers, too. We have very few, like, high-end wingers. So get Adam Sikora. He plays he's Slovakian and plays in the Slovakia League. And he's the kind of player where I guarantee you he'll be an NHLer. Like, he's got one of the highest floors in the NHL. And when you're saying you might take a guy at 63 who's almost guaranteed to be an NHLer, that is tremendously valuable. But he also has a decent enough skill where I think he could easily be a third liner, maybe a plug and play second liner as well. Overall, you know, well-rounded game, nothing in particular to brag about his game, but can certainly, you know, be someone that I think that the Rangers could target around there. And then in terms of centers, there's a kid named Adam Ingram, who's like right now he's a beanpole. He's like 6'2", 170. He plays in the USHL, but he's very skilled. Some of the prospect guys that really look at kind of just pure skill above everything else have him as a potential, you know, early second, late first rounder. He'll probably be available there in the mid second round. And I could see him being the kind of center who the Rangers would really go after. And then one other guy that I think the Rangers could certainly sort of target or be really, you know, interested in is there's a kid, he's a center that played in the AJHL. So this is the, you know, it's below even the CHL. It's like the league beneath that. And his name's Rieger Lorenz. And he's someone who you obviously put up huge numbers because he was playing in a lesser league, but he's, you know, a 6'2", one, you know, just shy 200 pound center who I believe he's committed to play for Denver next year. And the Rangers do like kids who are committed to go to the NCAA. And again, Rangers like smart, hardworking two-way players. That fits Rieger Lorenz, but he also has a pretty high ceiling in terms of just pure talent. You know, he's a little raw, obviously, and he needs to, he definitely needs some good coaching and to refine some of his skills, particularly some of his decision-making, some of his transitional play. But he's someone where he has like the raw abilities, where he's the kind of player where you can get late second round. And a few years from now, people look back and be like, how the hell did this kid not go in the first round?
Can I, before I have two Ty Smith related questions. One, I got to tell you who my that guy is for this draft. And then, but more importantly,
tell me.
It's Brad Lambert. It's just really funny to me that he's Finnish with an American name. I'm all about it. That's all I need to know. That's it. I don't need to know anything else about
him. I legitimately thought he was American. So go on.
Yeah, well, because from the land of Finland, like all the Kekalainens in the world, the Kaapo Kakkonens, the Kaapo Kakkos, ridiculous country. And then here's this guy whose name's Brad Lambert, and he's Finnish. All about it.
He's
fan.
From Florida. That's a lock.
his dad, I think, was a Canadian hockey player.
Yeah, well, his uncle is the new Islanders coach. That's the other thing I know about him. Yeah. So he's going to be an Islander. But, yeah, Greg's guy in this draft is Brad Lambert. That's just fucking hilarious. And then,
I'll pause real quick there. Brad Lambert, phenomenal. He's got, you remember how last year I was like Atu Ratu, the Finnish player? I was like, I think he should go in the lottery, but he's probably going to fall because people are stupid. Islanders take him the second round, and then he put up four goals in his first game afterwards. Like, that's like Brad Lambert. He is a big name, high pedigree, didn't do that well this year, so he's falling. He's the best skater in this entire draft class, phenomenally gifted. If he goes outside of the lottery, he's a guy that I'd be all for the Rangers trading up to get.
I don't give you bad players. My guys are always guys.
Right. But you were saying before, hey, like, would you trade Nils Lundqvist for the 20th pick? If Brad Lambert's there at 20, yes, I would.
And then before you give us the Ty Smith winner, do you feel less good about this award because Smith laid such a wet fart last season?
I don't, because it's easy. That's what happens when you are coached by Lindy Ruff. And I'll just leave it at that.
That's a great argument. Great job.
Yeah, it's the kid. Ty Smith was one of the best defensive prospects in hockey. Joins the Devils before anyone thought he would. Did phenomenal in his first season where Lindy Ruff wasn't there. And then all of a sudden, Lindy Ruff comes in, and he was statistically one of the worst defensemen in the entire NHL. Very similar to what happened with some of the Rangers' top prospects when Lindy Ruff and David Quinn were there as well. So, nope, totally fine with it. It's all Lindy Ruff's fault. Fuck that guy.
Yes, sir. give us your Ty Smith memorial this year, and we will let you get out of here.
Yeah. So the three final, and again, this will be published in the articles ranking. We're probably putting it out on Thursday. And in terms of the way the article goes is I named sort of three finalists, and I spoke about each of them already. It's Rucker McGroarty. It's Luca Del Belbeluz. And it is, I actually don't even remember the third guy. So obviously he didn't win.
So whoever... Team Bell Blues, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm all in on Del Bell. Like, sign me up.
Yeah. Well, the winner is going to be Rucker McGroarty. And
I will say, I appreciate Rutger because I appreciate Rutgers, a college I like betting against and winning money in college football season.
Well, and Rucker McGroarty, strong, strong hockey name, but he's someone where, again, there are people who have him in the second round, and I swear on anything that Rucker McGroarty, by pure talent alone, is easily a top 10 player in this class. It's just, again, the knock on him is skating. And Sam Stern is someone we all know and love on here.
We all know Sam.
Aside from his food. Well, we all know. Okay, fine. I love Sam. Maybe we all don't love Sam. But he's very well connected with prospects. He legitimately was a paid scout from, I think, the Chicago Steel is who, one of the USHL teams paid him to scout. So he's as well connected as anyone in terms of these prospects. And he was telling me the other day that, like, Rucker McGroarty already has a skating coach, he's very self-aware. A lot of issues some of these prospects have is they aren't self-aware and they kind of are blind to the improvement opportunities. He's very well aware that skating is the one thing he needs to improve on, already has a plan to improve on it. And if he can become even an average skater, like, he'll be looked at as no questions asked top 10 player in this draft class. He literally can do it all. Plus he's a dynamic talent, just isn't a burner. And because of that, he'll probably go late first, early second. And if I were a team picking, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, I'd have no problem calling his name all day, every day.
Not to sidetrack us and talk about a different sport, but just very important. We have to say this on the podcast. Quote, normal people keep the world going, but those who don't.
Kyrie Irving, Jesus Christ.
He's opting in and staying with the Nets.
I've never hated
an athlete more in my life, with the exception of Chase Utley and John Rocker. Like, shut the
fuck up.
I'll
put it this way.
I'm dying.
I'll put it this way. Aside from, like, criminals and, like, actual bad people, yes, like, I there are very few athletes I've despised more than Kyrie Irving.
I named a criminal and an actually bad person before Kyrie, so I'm happy that you.
What about John Franco? Kyrie or John Franco?
Hey!
He's just a bad dad. He's a fine dude.
We talk about him
all the time. Father's Day.
Jesus Christ. All right. I can't believe he opted in with the Nets. He's
Kyrie or Ryan's dad?
He's still. One of them still puts out quotes.
One of them, when he said he was opting out, actually did. That's all I'm saying.
I have to say, like, I know I tweeted this, and like, Ryan, I hope you realize, like, I was being serious.
No, I know. Joking. Yeah, I
like,
know.
Legitimately, one of my favorite things about Father's Day is Ryan's fucking Father's Day.
I had a lot of people be like, dude, I feel that. I am like, I'm with you, man. Like, no, it's hilarious, dude. My dad's been gone. Like, we're good. We're good, I promise.
Your mom just deserves a gift on Father's Day,
she's,
too.
She's there a G. I called her. We had a nice talk. We had a family day, so it was good. Yep. Good. All right, Drew, thanks so much for coming on. Anything you want to plug? Other than obviously the draft
right now. I mean, yeah, you guys know the stuff. Follow me at Drews_way, Drews_way. Check out Blue Shirt Breakaway site later this week for our rankings. You'll see rankings for me, Rich, and George, plus aggregate rankings, plus my Ty Smith nonsense, and some targets that we spoke about here that the Rangers could hopefully get at the late of the second. And then, thanks for having me on, Ryan and Greg. Love talking with you guys as always.
When are we cracking the whip and getting Declan to start contributing to this podcast? It's about time.
I mean, he's four now, and boy, he's got a mouth on him sometimes when he wants. So he can at least contribute as much as Greg does sometimes.
Oh, shots fired. We'll end on that. No rebuttal.
Before we go, I'll just say this. I know we've been doing this podcast for a very long time, and I understand that there are some things that make me go, Jesus Christ, how is that possible? We've been doing it
Declan's
this long.
Four.
Declan being four is the thing that makes me want to vomit.
Yeah, it's sickening.
Yeah. Greg, you in particular would get a kick out of him, I promise. But he'll be on at some point.
Yeah, next time you come, we're at the bar. Bring Declan. He'll fit right in.
There you go. Drinks on Declan.
We'll talk to you later. You can follow us on Twitter at O'Reilly. You can follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break. We'll be back next week. Love you guys. Bye. And it's time for America's favorite game show, where Ryan reads 76 names in a row and he butchers every single one. The NHL Insiders Club, where Ryan leaks certain stories like Adam Fox's contract a day early and some other things, where we talk about all things Rangers all the time. It's actually one of my favorite chats in the world. Anyway, Without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and butcher everyone's names. Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Adam Curtulo, Adam Keach, Adam Alex Gardner, Amber Coensberger, Anthony Terragata, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Brett McGinnis, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Broadway Blue Shirt Bleeder, Chris Finellius, Chris Hyrou, CJ Stillwagon, Conrad P. Demich, Daniel Dezen, David Narodin, David Siegel, Dennis Dice, Darian, Eric Stagg, Garrett Reynes, Give Gardner a Cup, Gary McFly, Gretzky, Garrett McFly, Handle, Harrison Hasco, Hip 89, Holosauce, Ian Rodriguez, Ian Usher, Jake B., James Masker, Jamie Filipponi, Jarian Marquez, JD, Jamie Mack, JJ Frankie, JJ, John Hardesty, John Shea, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Josh Kestenbaum, Justin Friedman, Chris from Florida, Christoph Berg, Laura Ross, Leishik Gronkowski. Oh, he's going to kill me. Luigi Ardano, Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kine, the legend himself, Meatball the Cat, Mike Bucklaw, Neil Grover, Nicholas DiNicola, one of my favorite names to say, by the way. Pascal Perrier, I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Pascal Perrier, Pavel Kojarev, Pro World the Tanks, Gamer, Randy Tesser, Scottish Grant, Sean Taggart, Steve Manella, Stig Bullbox, Weingard, Tommy Welsh, Tom Sicleri, Tommy Ertz Jr., Tommy O'Neill. I call you all Tommy, even though if it's Tom, I hope you're okay with that. Tori from Manhattan, Upstate Vin, Vinny Bracco, Vinny Hay, Will Spector, and Winston, the Golden Retriever. The cup is over, ladies and gentlemen. And finally, we can focus on what really matters. Will the Rangers make rash decisions and actually sign Kaprastrom to long-term contracts? Will they trade Kaapo Kakko for fun things? Stay tuned as the summer is about to heat up in the next couple days, to be honest. What's going to happen here, and you know this, it's going to be pretty active for a couple weeks in July. Fun times, a lot of rumors, a lot of swirling. Then everything will be done by the second week in August. And there will be no news at all, and Greg and I will be coming up with the most nonsense podcasts possible from, I don't know, middle of August until September 16th, something like that. Then the preseason starts, we can start talking about lines and all that stuff. There's only 60 days till Rangers hockey. Are you kidding me? 60 days? What the hell? All right, we'll be back next week, or actually we'll be back on BSBOT later this week with Greg and I. Fun times, and we'll talk to you then. Love you guys. Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.